Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Campbell. I'm going to go ahead and call our meeting for the Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners. We're going to call to order at, looks like it's about 8:33 a.m. on December the 9th of 2020. Before I do roll call, I have a statement that I'd like to read. Please be advised that this is a professional administrative meeting. All board members will conduct themselves in a professional manner, and it is expected that all other participants will conduct themselves in a professional manner. Combativeness, rudeness, or verbal aggression will not be tolerated, and if such behavior occurs, the board chair reserves the right to limit who may address the board. The board strives to conduct its meetings with the utmost respect for the process and for those in attendance. Thank you. So I know Heather has checked to see who's online, but I'm going to go ahead and we'll do our roll call now. Dr. Campbell, present. Mr. Rhodes?
Present.
Dr. Foreman?
Present.
Dr. Ilano?
Present.
And Dr. Saunders, our investigator? Dr. Saunders, are you there?
Sorry, I had you muted. Sorry, present.
Thank you. And, of course, our executive director, Ms. Heather Broaddus, is present, as well as Mr. Seamus Monahan, who is our assistant attorney general. I believe Mr. Abadi will be coming later to participate at the meeting. And do we have Mira Panda? Is she present yet on the phone?
I do not believe so.
Okay, thank you. And then we have our complainant, and we remember to use the initials of DD. Alrighty, so does anybody have any declaration of conflict of interest for any items on the agenda today? Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we'll move on here to four, which is the review, discussion, and possible action on our board meeting minutes. First is November the 17th of 2020, our general session board meeting minutes. I do have a question on that for Heather. Heather, on page 9 of those minutes, which would actually, that starts on page 4 of our packet. Let me go down. And it's the second paragraph. And I was wondering, should we have included in there any notation that mentioned that Dr. Huston had on her own and at the direction of Mr. Crawford, her attorney, voluntarily attended some CME prior to the informal hearing? Should that be recognized, or is it enough that it's on the recording? Board members, do you have any comments about that, or do you?
I think you can go either way.
Okay. To me, this is a recording, and the suggestion is to leave it the way it is.
Okay. Mr. Rose, you. Okay. And then Heather on page 10. Bruce Crawford was live. He was not telephonic. Dr. Clark was, but he wasn't. Okay. The way it reads, it looks like it's saying that Mr. Crawford was electronic, and he had been here for the interview before. It's the third paragraph of that. 20-17-C.
Yeah. Heather, my computer keeps freezing up.
Okay. So that's the only correction I saw on there. Anybody else have any other corrections or additions for the general session minutes?
No, I didn't. I didn't have it.
Thank you. All right, seeing that we've had the discussion regarding the minutes, I will move to accept the general session minutes of November 17th, 2020 with the corrections as discussed. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay, we'll move on then to the executive session minutes from November 17th, 2020. The only thing I saw, and it's just minor, is that Dr. Foreman's name was misspelled. Had an F-O-R-E instead of just F-O-R-M-A-N, that's all. That was all I saw in there, so nothing earth-shattering, so. Anybody else find anything that needs correction? All right, so.
No, I missed that too.
Well, golly gee, huh? All right, so seeing that there are no other additions or corrections, I'll make a motion to accept executive session minutes from November 17th, 2020. Do you have a second? Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you. All righty. Let's move on then. We have our next is item 5, which is our investigation file. And this is for complaint number 20-19-D for Dr. Joyce Ratner. Dr. Saunders is our investigator and our complainant is present DD, so we will go ahead and have Dr. Saunders please give your investigation report.
Sure, thank you. This is a little bit of a sensitive issue as to the complainant's husband is here, or the complainant is the husband of the patient that has passed away, so sorry for that inconvenience that we have to do as far as discussing this again, but I'll summarize this for everybody here, and I did do a report, but there is a complaint regarding a misdiagnosis that eventually led to the morbidity of the patient, and the complainant relates or feels that the delay in diagnosis and care led to the morbidity. There were some underlying concerns regarding transfer of care as Dr. Ratner was open and was retiring, and there was some question as to whether or not there was a transfer of care established. Dr. Ratner saw this patient twice, it seemed, in a brief encounters. The patient was originally presenting for pain and swelling. She was seen back in early March. Initial visit was focused really for the foot, that there was some pain and swelling that had been persisting for some time. And Dr. Ratner evaluated the patient and ordered some x-rays, did a follow-up in a couple of days regarding the x-rays, and was basically treating her for some arthritis, and there was a working diagnosis for a stress fracture. Shortly thereafter, a review of the x-rays and MRI was ordered, and then there was patient was kind of, they went for a second opinion thereafter, but there was a communication after the MRI was done regarding the findings, and a recommendation was made by Dr. Ratner. Subsequently, they did go for a second opinion. I don't have all of those notes available at the moment to review, but according to the husband providing his report, that they did see an orthopedist that was not necessarily a foot and ankle specialist, but an orthopedist nonetheless. They did a treatment which seemed to provide some initial relief for her pain. It was further immobilizing her, which is what Dr. Ratner actually recommended after the MRI was done. Approximately 2 months after Dr. Ratner saw the patient, a month after the orthopedist saw the patient, this patient underwent some respiratory issues. There was a went to the, got admitted to the hospital and passed away. There was a coroner's report which they did diagnose as a thought embolus. There was no real further work as to where that came from, but the patient did have some other issues, hypertension, some obesity, coronary disease that also was attributed to that. I did a review of the notes and I looked at the radiograph, and what's presented for me is consistent with the workup of really of a partial spur and degenerative joint changes, which Dr. Ratner was working a rep for. There were no real indications for a DVT in the lower extremity that was seen clinically, at least. That's two physicians reviewing the patient as well. There are some other indicators that the patient was ambulatory, was walking with the Cambuda and feeling better as well. I don't have the orthopedic notes available. So, you know, at this point, I think Dr. Radner's care was within the standard workup. The patient presented with some pain and swelling for her foot. She did some x-rays. She then ordered an MRI and ultimately recommended a mobilization with a boot. Patient did get a second opinion. From all accounts, that seems to be consistent with what Dr. Ratner was recommending. Unfortunately, the patient did have a pulmonary embolism. It's uncertain as to where that source was. Me looking at the MRI, it did include a little bit of the lower extremity. I did not see any significant soft tissue swelling in the on the MRI. The radiographs as well don't show a lot of lower extremity swelling to the lower leg. And there isn't any indication for lower extremity edema, pain, Hohmann sign noted positive or negative in the chart. So I think the billing was appropriate when I looked at the billing for Dr. Radner's office. And there was some notations and communication that the, Dr. Radner was open that she was retiring and then she was going to transfer her care to the new group that was taking over her practice. So I don't see any type of breach in standard of care. And I'm open for any questions that I can help answer.
All right. This is Dr. Campbell, Dr. Saunders. The orthopedic physician placed the patient on steroids, so if that was a medrol dose pack or what. But
yeah, that's what I saw on the chart. And just going by the complainant's report, I don't have any notes available for that. Mm-hmm. But apparently, when they went for a second opinion, a medrol dose pack was prescribed as well to Cambute, and you know, the patient felt a lot better at that point.
Right, right.
Which is also consistent with several things, but it's consistent also with what Dr. Ratner was treating it for.
Correct, and I definitely agree with your findings and your report and your discussion, because obviously, as the medical examiner's report, that there certainly are so many other possibilities of, you know, as reasons to, you know, the risk of developing a PE. And
yeah, during immobilization to provide therapeutics at this point anyway.
Right.
Right.
And of course, you know, that one of the biggest ones on there too is, I think, you know, is an unknown, you know, coagulation issue, and you know, and we, that's obviously not in the history and things like that. So. It certainly is an unfortunate event that occurred, but I have a hard time connecting, particularly when there's that change or there's that period of time between, you know, treatment to actually when, you know, the symptoms that the decedent's spouse discusses in his report. So yeah.
Oh. Sorry, also when we're doing the x-ray report, Dr. Radner referred out to one of the imaging facilities. There's a marker, one of the vitamin E tablets or such, on the foot itself. So there's no real indications that the patient was having lower extremity pain in the calf.
Right.
There's no real indication for history present illness or chief concerns regarding anything that would lead to a potential workup for a DVT.
Yes, of course.
And
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
This is Dr. Foreman. The only question I have, now the standard of care for the orthopedist, if he assumed it was a DVT, would be to get a venous scan of the leg, and it was undone. Is that correct, or we don't have records for that?
I mean, I don't have any records of it. I think the standard of care for an orthopedist is the same as the standard of care for us regarding. I don't think there's a difference in standards. There is no indication, again, I don't have reports, but there's no indication that the patient under the orthopedic care was contemplating or in a differential diagnosis for a DVT in the lower extremity. Patient was immobilized. If there was a DVT, he would have went to the emergency room. He would have been treated, would have gotten an ultrasound done, and he would not have been immobilized for the orthopedist. So I think that that physician did have that in his differential as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Lano?
Hi, Dr. Saunders. I agree this is an unfortunate situation. And again, I want to reiterate, the patient had no signs or symptoms of a DVT or pulmonary embolism. Dr. Radner?
I don't see that at all. And, you know, Dr. Radner, in her notes, actually has an O2 saturation at 95 for the patient. And she doesn't mention any signs that would, in her notes, in her evaluation, to suspect such.
And again, I want to reiterate the incident occurred 2 months after Dr. Radner left contact with the patient.
I think it was at least 2 months after, yes. I think the medical examiner, I think, was in 429. And Dr. Radner first saw the patient on 310, so almost 2 months.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Radner.
Mr. Rhodes, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No.
All righty. Thank you all. All right. Now we have the deceased's spouse. His initials are DD. So, sir, if you'd please come and have a seat. And I'm sure all my board members are well read on the complainant's summary. So, sir, I would just ask if you would just please give us about a 10-minute summary of your documentation that you have presented to the board.
I would be glad to. We took my wife in to see Dr. Radner on March 10th. March 10th was the day after she woke up having this edema and pain in her foot. When we went in, the very first moment she says it was a stress fracture. Now, I've spent more than 42 years in pre-hospital in EMS as a teacher, as an educator. I force my students at all levels to work off of evidence. So the first question I asked her when she came up with that was, what was your mechanism for it? And her words were, it just happens. Well, I've worked pre-hospital on an ambulance for more than 40 years, and I'm going to tell you, nothing just happens. There's a mechanism. So I thought that her information was incorrect. I thought that her logic was incorrect. As we left the office, I tried to convince my wife to let me go find another physician because I had no faith in her. And she refused to do that because she didn't like to go to doctors in the first place. I would question upon many of the observations that she has, the amount of swelling that was there, and for close to 6 weeks, she treated nothing. She was on a pain scale of 12 on a 10 for 6 weeks, and nothing was done to treat that. In 2000, when I was teaching at Midwestern, we had a whole new theory come out about pain management and understanding how pain affects systemically in a homeostatic basis of the whole body. So pain needs to be treated. and she did nothing. She had no other impression but a stress fracture. And I would question everyone here to ask, what are the symptoms of a DVT? Could swelling in the lower extremity, in the ankle, could that be a potential one? She did have a problem with obesity. It is documented. So we're going to take a patient that's obese, put them on non-ambulatory movement, and do nothing to treat any type of clotting? Why was not ASA offered at 81 milligrams a day? Why was that not considered? Why was everything, when no evidence based off the MRI or the x-ray show anything about a stress fracture, yet she stayed with it? That's not medical science. Medical science is based off of evidence. That's not what we do in science. That's not what we do in medicine. People die every day. I've seen it thousands of times in my career. But we need to go back and understand why, and we need to see if we've done something wrong. And as much as I understand the board's statement here, I disagree with you guys. We have a body, a human body. It's one system made up of 9 subsystems, not individual systems that make up one. I believe we have a problem with protocol here. You have an obese patient. No treatment was done for any type of coagulation issue. Nothing was looked at other than a bone structure issue. We're treating a whole body. I thank you for allowing me the time to mention this, but I do think you guys are you're missing a whole boat here, and that's where medical science fails now. We're treating a whole body, not one aspect.
I'd like to ask you for a few questions, sir. When did your spouse have her total hip replacement? Do you have a year when that, or was that recent?
2 years prior to this. She was going back. In fact, a month after she died, she was having her third follow-up, her 3-year follow-up with the doctor that did the hip replacement.
All right. And the hysterectomy, when was that?
Many years ago. Yeah,
right.
That's in my, I think is an irrelevant thing.
Right. Well, I'd like to ask questions.
Understand.
I'm very thorough.
Yes, ma'am.
How about hormone replacement therapy? We didn't, has there been any HRT?
No.
And in no awareness of any inherited clotting disorders that were presented at any other of these surgeries that might have not been reported to the doctor?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. And prior to her experiencing the swelling and pain with her foot, had she participated in any kind of increase in activity or increase in her weight bearing or any unusual activities?
No, she was a fourth grade teacher. She walked around every day in her classroom. She would spend about 8 to 10 hours a day on her feet walking around.
Mm-hmm.
She had no mobility problems, no gait problems, no pain, no nothing.
Okay. Well, one of the things that you remarked was you said that Dr. Ratner told you that these things, that stress fractures just happen. Well, you know, in females who are postmenopausal from surgery that are not on any hormone replacement therapies, a lot of times will get stress fractures because the bone isn't as strong. And you can have even though it doesn't seem like it's, there's no major trauma, but a repetitive low-grade stress can cause a stress fracture. And the MRI did show bone marrow edema, which is an indication for stress in the bone. So, and I can, that would be certainly an indication as to why, you know, Dr. Ratner felt that was her basis of diagnosis. Also, she, you know, the degenerative joint disease can cause a lot of soft tissue swelling and tendonitis. your spouse did not complain about any shortness of breath or anything else that would also lead to that possibility, and having, you know, there wasn't any, you know, was there any indication? I don't believe anybody has mentioned anything. If there was major swelling or heat in the extremity. So I understand your thought process here, and I believe that, you know, Dr. Ratner is astute enough that if she felt that was in the differential, she would have, you know, asked more questions or on this topic. Like I said, I don't see that anything was directed in questioning or symptomatology that your spouse gave. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, do you have questions? Gentlemen?
No, I don't have any questions.
Dr. Ulano?
Yeah, hi, Mr. DD. I know this is a very unfortunate situation, and I sympathize with you. But reading her records and what I saw, she didn't come out and complain about shortness of breath or the symptoms that I would see at the dying house where I'm pulmonary and embolism because of her arthritis and her
I would agree with you on that. She did not. I've spent weeks trying to help figure out what this was, and until she died, I didn't know. But as soon as I walked in, I knew exactly what the cause of death was. Dr. Campbell, I have one question for you.
Yeah.
What did you state that her SpO2 was?
Dr. Saunders.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. That's, Saunders, that's... what did you state her SpO2 was?
I have Dr. Ratner's finding. This is from March 10th, I believe. O2 saturations were at 95%.
Okay.
Vitals were relatively normal.
All right. I don't know what you guys look at, but I will tell you, in a pre-hospital setting, although 95 isn't acceptable, that's not what we go by as a standard of saying that there is no respiratory issue. So as far as I'm concerned, I think that there was something that was missed in that aspect. 95 is low end on SpO2, according to the standards that we use in pre-hospital. I don't know what you guys' standards are, but that's what we use. If someone's on 95 SpO2, we're putting them on oxygen because they are distressed. So in my opinion, I think that there were signs there, and they were subtle. But let's face it. How many times do patients tell you absolutely everything you need to deal with to come up with a diagnosis? We have to spend time questioning. We have to ask the right questions. I spend hours teaching students how to interview for a reason. Because in pre-hospital, we're the ones that are most likely going to see something or pull up something that you guys aren't going to know about. All I'm asking is, why don't we do that in the medical profession as physicians?
Mr. Rose, did you have any questions?
No questions.
Okay, just a second. I just wanted to... Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, you know, I'd like to hear from you how this compares for you. You know, when you're seeing patients with the possibility of a DVT and comparing to what this gentleman is describing is how he would approach a problem.
Well, without any complaints of leg pain, calf pain, erythema in the area, I would not, you know, it's always in the back of your mind, but unless there was no injury to anything, a DVT, based the record would not be one of the primary differential diagnoses I would have.
Thank you. That's, I'm in agreement with you. How about Dr. Yolano?
Patients that I've seen with a DVT and a diagnosis, as they come in, one leg is more swollen than the other. They get immobilized, usually post-surgical, that I can feel a tenderness on the calf and the thigh. Usually there's a history of a surgery or just immobilization with those who weren't able to move for a while.
And also, and I will include Dr. Saunders in this discussion. The percentage of patients who develop DVTs, you know, we consider, have they had superficial phlebitis before? Was there a history of varicose veins? And I don't see those, you know, as any part of the medical record that there was any indication of those. I believe Dr. Ratner, you know, that the circulatory health of the extremity was within normal limits. Am I correct, Dr. Saunders?
Yeah, I agree. And there was no indication on Dr. Ratner only actually saw the patient for 2 days, the 10th and the 12th. Wow. And at that time, there is nothing given in the patient's chief concern on their handwritten note when, hey, what are you here for, when they sign out forms. There's nothing indicating that, oh my gosh, my leg is hurting and we're having problems with my calf, or even the ankle at that point. Everything pretty much was directed to the foot. Now, you know, I'm not trying to point blame for anybody at this point as to when and when something was missed. But a DVT and a PE can occur at any point. It could occur after the patient was seen by the orthopedist, when it was occurring. It's not to say that there was some underlying DVT that was missed that was 6 weeks before Dr. Ratner saw the patient. If indeed the patient did have a DVT, which we don't know if the patient did, it could have come from anywhere, included COVID-related, which has significantly increased the hypercoagulate state, and DVTs and are popping up more often than we think as a cause of death for COVID-related. But, you know, I've seen a lot of DVTs in my practice, and, you know, they can pop up very quickly, and it doesn't mean it's been sitting there for 3 months. Normally you get a DVT, and within a week you get a PE. It's not that you have a DVT for 3 months and then get a PE. So the timing of such is questionable at this point. We don't know, nor will we know, some of the true incidences of what happened.
Thank you. I agree with you.
Doctor, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Mr. Bordelau?
Yes. Yes, Dr. Saunders, you can answer.
Do you typically, in your exams, compare right to left side? Do you physically look at them? Do you physically look at the leg when the patient comes in, or do you isolate strictly on a foot?
You know, if the patient's wearing shorts, I certainly always will compare because it's within your eyesight. There are times, depending on swelling and pain, that I will have them roll up their leg. It's quite common that I will look, yes.
Okay, I'm going to tell you that that's not what occurred in this setting.
Okay.
I just, to give you information, that's not what occurred.
Yeah,
that was part of my concern with Dr. Ratner, is I don't, from the moment I walked in, I did not believe she was being thorough. She did not ask the right questions, and she did not conduct a physical exam, in my opinion. And again, take it for what it's worth, I'm only a paramedic, I'm not a doctor.
We've all have you know, stated that this is, certainly it is an unfortunate event that occurred. Nobody else was there in the room, and, you know, we're getting information from what our investigator says, and then from the deceased patient's spouse. And certainly, sir, I can well recognize your experience as a paramedic, and I understand proper teaching. I know I'm also involved in teaching of students and observation and completeness in examining patients and asking questions. And again, my colleagues, who are very well trained, board certified individuals who have practiced for a long time, know what to look for when they're treating their patients. In practice, you get to a point where you can really zoom in. You have a gut feeling on things. And I can personally tell you, what my patients that had DVTs, you looked at that, I mean, the leg was looked like it was going to blow up. And it would, you know, and there are times, too, where it is a more subtle, but if you have that instinctual feeling, and I believe that Dr. Ratner, if she had that, a feeling of that from some reason in her exam, which she obviously did not indicate that there was anything that drew her to that, or again to the orthopedic surgeon who saw this patient, who as an orthopedist would have had experiences with DVTs, that it can come from the arm. It's most commonly major vessels, the iliac, sometimes the inferior vena cava, like I said, the arm, and the superficial femoral is another location it can come from. It's very, you know, major fractures typically would be the pelvis or the femur. We don't have a major fracture here. So those are all things that would lead would lead someone towards that possibility of a diagnosis. And again, like I said, again, I appreciate your, you know, interest in teaching properly to young people in the medical field, proper observation and conversations with patients. But I'm also, you know, seeing that you had, you know, your wife, you said she went against medical advice and, you know, a process of watching, you know, the shortness of breath didn't come till, you know, way, way later. And as my colleagues have said, things can happen very, very quickly. So I don't believe that Dr. Ratner failed you or your wife in any way. As Dr. Saunders said, she really only saw you once. She did inform you that she was retiring. Your wife decided she didn't want to go to another physician. So we have, there's a lot of involved in this whole story. And like we've all said, it's very unfortunate that your wife passed. I certainly understand the angst of that, but in my opinion, and I believe the opinion of my fellow physician members, that there was nothing in the state statutes that said she violated a standard of practice. Dr. Yolano or Dr. Foreman, do you have anything to add? Or
no, I think you said it very well, Dr. Campbell.
Dr. Yolano?
Yeah, Mr. Dede, again, I sympathize with you. This is a very unfortunate situation. But clinically, what Dr. Ratner provided, what Dr. Ratner saw, it would have been very hard for her to pinpoint that Dede is coming to one.
So
I'm very sorry for your loss.
Mr. Rhodes, anything?
I agree, and you know, while this is very unfortunate, sir, and I'm truly sorry for your loss, but I see no violation of state statute or standard of care, and I would move to dismiss 1920-80.
Thank you. that your numbers were reversed there, Mr. Rhodes. It's 20-19-C.
Oh, I did it backwards, yes.
Do we?
20-19-C.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Ulano. All right, so because we are telephonic here, I will take roll call vote. Mr. Rhodes?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Dr. Ulano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Thank you. Again, truly, sir, we are sorry for your loss.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. All righty. We'll move on here to, is Dr. Panja on the line yet?
Dr. Kimball, I do not believe so. Dr. Panja, are you present on the phone?
Apparently not. Well, we'll just go ahead. So we're on our issuances of licenses. Our first is Dr. Mira Panda. She is completed her residency on June the 30th of 2020. She's currently in a fellowship that finishes in 21. She has a license in Pennsylvania. Everything else is in great shape on her application. Does anyone have any comments or questions? Okay, well, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Panja's application for initial licensure as it is complete and to issue her license upon payment of a license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Our next is Dr. Justin Singh. Dr. Singh also has completed a residency in 2020 and is also a fellow. He's licensed in Ohio. His application is complete. Does anyone have any concerns with this applicant? Okay, so seeing no issues, I will move to accept Dr. Singh's application for initial licensure as it is complete and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. And then we have Dr. Joshua Wolf. Dr. Wolf is currently in his residency in Missouri and will not complete the residency till June 30th of 2021. All his exams have been taken, no complaints. He has a temporary license that will carry him through in Missouri till the completion of his residency. So anybody have any concerns here? If not, then I will make a motion to accept his application for initial licensure as it is complete and to issue his license upon successful completion of his residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. So next is we have one application for the initial registration to dispense drugs and devices. Dr. Zeno Pfau. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correct. Fee's been paid. Everything is present as requested in the application. So I will make a motion to accept Dr. Fowle's initial application to dispense drugs and devices. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is a compliance update here for Dr. Farrell. Dr. Farrell did not perform any new nerve decompression surgeries in September or October of 2020. So he properly updated us. Then our next is E is a renewal application for license, Arizona license and dispensing from Dr. Leonard Wagner. Do you want to go through that, Heather?
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. At its September 9th, 2020 meeting, the board granted Dr. Wagner a 60-day extension to complete the required continuing education hours. His deadline to complete those hours was November 9th, 2020. On November 13th, I received correspondence from Dr. Wagner indicating that he was unable to meet the November 9th, 2020 deadline due to health issues, and the health issues are spelled out in the documentation that the board has. And I've had multiple phone conversations with him, and Dr. Wagner has indicated that he would be attending continuing education through the Podiatry Institute on November 24th. And I actually, since I've sent out board materials, I did get the certificate of completion for Dr. Wagner for that conference. I'm still waiting for an opioid certificate from him. So because he was unable to complete the hours before or on the original deadline, it's before the board for review. And I can answer any questions the board may have.
Anybody have any questions for Heather? So then we our options basically are just to approve these on when we receive his certificates of completion. We could deny his renewal if you wanted to, or take some other action. So does anybody have any remarks?
I would consider an extension in regards to because of his medical issues.
It was a 2-week delay, correct? From the 9th to the 23rd?
Yes, Dr. Foreman, that's correct.
So he did it with the PI Institute, so that was a dated conference instead of just going into like podiatry management.
Correct.
So I'm okay with the 2-week.
What's your opinion, Dr. Alano?
Like I said it before, I'm okay with the medical extension, with the extension due to medical reasons. Okay.
Mr. Rhodes?
I agree.
Yeah.
Extension.
Yeah. Okay, so then. He did have his extension, so what we're just determining is we're okay that he was late, those 2 weeks late, getting back to Heather. Is that's kind of where we are with that, because he was given those extensions. So, but it seems like I agree too with, he's had some, health issues and stuff, that the 2 weeks is not anything, outrageous. If it had been 2 and 3 months, that'd be a little different story, I believe. So I think at this point, so we're just waiting on his opiate certificate, that I would make a motion then to accept Dr. Leonard Wagner's renewal application his renewal license and dispensing registration. He's complete. His application is complete, and he just has to then get Heather his final certificate for the opioids. So I would move to accept his renewal and to issue his renewal license upon final receipt of the opiate certificate.
How long will it take?
So is that motion clear then?
Yes.
Okay, great. So do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All righty. So Mr. Abadi was here and he stepped out because we're going to discuss the podiatric medical assistance. So I'll just wait for him to come back in, but we can go ahead and move to G as we can take care of that. That's regarding a request for a second continuance from Dr. Michael Dershowitz for complaint 2022-C. So Heather, you want to, does anybody have questions for Heather on this after reading the emails? Dr. Dershowitz was given already one extension. They requested a second extension because they've indicated they wanted to have they were trying to get information from an expert witness, but because of COVID, they were having issues. My opinion here is he's had one extension, which is normal, you know, we give those, but a second one to get a expert witness, this is only an initial review. It's not like it's for an informal hearing. So I don't think, my opinion is not to extend one, but I'd like to know what everybody else thinks. Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ulano?
This is Dr. Foreman. You know, these are extenuating times right now with reaching people. I'm okay with giving one more, and that to me is a final one.
Dr. Ulano?
You know, in lieu of what Dr. Foreman said, I'm okay with giving him one more because of what's going on.
I agree. Give them an extension. It's the length that we need to talk about.
Maybe we just be to the next meeting. 30-day extension.
30 days from today.
No,
And Madam Chair, Board members, if I may, I believe that the correspondents requested specifically an additional 30-day extension. So administratively, that is the length of the continuance, but it would be up to the board as to whether or not you allowed a second 30-day extension. You can make the time shorter or longer.
So that was requested on the 4th. So then that would give them till January 4.
The extension deadline would be from the response deadline, which would be December 21st.
Today. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then that would actually give them till January 21st. So then this probably wouldn't even be on the agenda until February.
It would be longer. It would be March or April, because I would still need to assign it to an investigator.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So do we need a motion regarding this? Obviously. Okay. So then I will make in consideration for the opinion of my fellow board members, then I will make a motion to agree to the request for a second extension in regards to case 2022-C, Michael Dershowitz, DPM.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Abadi. Come on up. Next discussion here is F, the podiatric medical assistance issues. So, Heather, included in our package, again, the definitions here from different boards in Arizona with their discussion or with their description or definition for a medical assistant. So everybody's had time to review those. I think the one that, you know, if the one that goes with what the MDs use, if we put in the words, you know, podiatric medical assistant, the one that means, well, if it would read like this, podiatric medical assistant means an unlicensed person who has completed an educational program approved by the board who assists in a podiatric medical practice under the supervision of a doctor of podiatric medicine and who performs delegated procedures commensurate with the assistant's education and training, but who does not diagnose, interpret, design, or modify established treatment programs or violate any statute. So that would be, let's see here, that's the fourth definition. No, wait, is that one? Fifth definition on page 332 of your packet. So do you, is that, what do you guys think? Is that a definition that you would think fits what we're trying to, you know, develop here?
Yeah,
sure.
I think that works.
I have a question, but is it an educational program approved by the board? So how would we use this criteria? What would we use as an educational program that we approve?
Well, I think, Dr. Lano, that last time, and now Mr. Abadi can probably will remember, I believe Dr. Discount and Dr. Peters last time talked about the state association creating, or that was for the radiology, I think. But I don't know if they were talking. Did they speak about creating an educational program at all for? Okay.
Yes,
please, Miss. Pardon me, there, Dr. Foreman.
Yes, I think Dr. Peters mentioned that the state association will have a program for podiatric medical assistance at the next meeting.
And Madam Chair,
yeah.
Board members, if I may, this is Heather Broaddus. That is something that the board would need to address and rule. So once this definition gets put into statute, then the board will have to consider going through the rulemaking process to develop rules regarding continuing education educational programs. And at that time, I can provide you with language that other boards have. And I wanted to correct myself. At the last meeting, I indicated that the rulemaking process as of now requires that for every rule that you add, you have to take away five. I went back and looked at the executive order, and it's for every one rule that you create, you have to take away three existing rules. So it would be a little bit more feasible for the board to go through the rulemaking process.
Mr. Abadi, I think you wanted to say something.
No, my only thought for you all is to whatever you do, you're going to do by rule. You want to make give the statutes you some authority, a definite authority to be able to do that by rule, to create a program for medical assistance and regulate them and so forth. My only thought from last meeting, I'll say it again, is in statute you want to keep it as simple and as broad as possible to give you, the board, as much flexibility as possible. As you know, the MDs have a very defined program in statute, or at least what they can do or whatever. And I don't know if you need all that. You can do all, flesh that out and rule and just give you, it's, you don't want to have to go back next year to say, oh, well, this doesn't work, and we'll have to go back to the statute again to make a change. If you keep it as simple as possible, as most of the boards, if you see the language, one sentence in their rule, in their statutes, it gives them the flexibility. Apparently, it's that language has been in there for 30 years or more, and it's worked for them. So I wouldn't want to suggest that you want to reinvent the wheel, but if you need a little bit more specificity, that's great. I mean, the association is going to yield to whatever you think works for you and that accomplishes the purpose that we goal that we both want to achieve. So whatever you all think is best and that is workable for you is, I'm sure, will be satisfactory and we'd be supportive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, on the educational training program, the thought I just had was, you know, so many of my colleagues, I mean, I think we were, people always like to be able to train their medical assistants on their own and not necessarily have somebody come from, like, you know, Bryman or some of the other training programs. So, Mr. Abadi, when you indicate, you know, having a more generalized definition, that maybe that's something that would, if, I don't know, whatever people's opinion, if that's something that would not necessarily have to be in that definition?
Madam Chair, board members, if I may, I believe that the language that Mr. Abadi is referring to is under the regulation portion of the statute, and I did include that language as well. The medical, and it looks to me like the medical assistant definition for MDs, it just says approved by the board. It doesn't, in the MD's rules, it is very specific as to the educational program requirements, but in statute, it just says approved by the board.
Okay.
But if I remember, Madam Chairman, if I may, I do remember the MD statute is a little bit more detailed, if I remember correctly, in some of the,
yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, what a medical assistant would do or whatever. That's what I was referring to. It doesn't need to be in the statute per se. Heather, I think you've seen that in there. We've talked about that. Again, whatever you come up with, I'm sure will hopefully achieve the purpose. I'm just saying keep it simple for you to give you as much flexibility, and it will allow the profession to work with you all, the licensing board, to come up with a program that would work for everybody and be cognizant of your regulatory authority and not make it too burdensome, but make it work for everyone. And that's through the rule process. All you need now is some statutory authority for you to proceed, to put some flesh on the bones, as it were.
So then if that definition, if everybody likes that definition, or if we need to tweak it some more, and then that would be something that, if we're able to add that to our legislation, Heather, right?
Yes, I would have to contact Senate staff and ask for the amendment. So there's no guarantee, but it's something that I would ask for.
Yeah, and you should have time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't think you'd have a problem adding that on to your draft, since it's your draft.
And Madam Chair, board members, if I may, so if the board is comfortable with that definition, then I did include language that other boards have under their regulation section of their statute, and these are the statutes that I believe that Mr. Abadi is referring to. So I included the homeopathic board, the osteo board, and the chiropractic board's language. I did not include the medical board's language because with our last conversation that was brought up that the medical board was very detailed.
Mm-hmm.
So if the board if it's a consensus of the board to add the medical assistant definition, then I would also recommend adding language under the regulation portion of the statute.
Okay.
So just for clarification, it'd be a definition for medical assistant and also adding something like is in other boards under the regulatories.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be on page 333 of our board packet, those last three definitions, or those last three where the homeopathic board says the chapter does not prevent a medical assistant from assisting a licensee pursuant to rules adopted by the board. Nothing in this chapter shall be construed to prevent a medical assistant from assisting a doctor of osteopathic medicine pursuant to rules adopted by the board. Or the other option, nothing in this chapter shall be construed to prevent a chiropractic assistant from assisting a doctor of chiropractic pursuant to rules adopted by the board except the chiropractic specialty of acupuncture by needle insertion. So, like that, looks like the one, that first one, the homeopathic board, that seems to, you know, all we'd, you know, on that one to just say assisting a, you know, just say, you know, podiatry board, mm-hmm. that would be very simple. Does that, you know, Heather, with all your experience in this rulemaking and stat, does that, would that be mm-hmm. a good, you agree with that or you like that suggestion? Can we ask you any of that kind of stuff, Seamus? Do you have a?
No, that's really a policy matter for the board to discuss.
Yeah. So what do you gentlemen think?
I think keeping it simple.
I agree with that.
Okay.
I agree with the attorney about it. I support keeping it simple and broad. I would ask the licensed attorney about it. What do you think about these things that we talked about, keeping it simple and broad?
Yeah, no, that's what I've been saying for a while as a suggestion, that you want to be able to give you broad authority, and you fill in the blanks later on by rule, and that way, by the rule process, people can have input. Obviously, the profession could have input in the rule process, and others. And you want to have that flexibility to meet the needs of ever-changing, you know, circumstances in the office. In the medical field and in the office. So that having a broad statute, a proven statute that others have used already, and it seems to have worked over those many years. Remember, these laws we're talking about, the homeopaths and the chiropractors and the osteopaths and also the naturopaths, I think, at the time too. Obviously, those statutes I don't think have been changed at all. That's the original language, and so it's worked since 1988 or 89, whenever the original bill was passed on medical assistance, and it was all done with all these different professions combining in different statutory circumstances there in one bill. So if that answers your question, the language, the exact language is up to you all, of course, what you think works for you. But we want to like to be a part of the process and work with you all and give you input as things progress. But hopefully this is a good thing, not only for the profession, as I said before, but for you all, to give you the statutory authority, firm statutory authority to continue to regulate medical assistance and so forth. And you will have that now, and I think the Attorney General would be more comfortable if you had that language. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but that's what.
Mm-hmm. So then, I want to make sure everybody that we're in agreement here with how to proceed then to in adding the podiatric medical assistant definition that I read. That actually, like I said, it comes from that last, it's that last definition on page 332 of the packet, and then follow that with on page 333 using that the homeopathic board's description, they saying that this chapter does not prevent a medical assistant, and use podiatric medical assistants obviously, and podiatry board, from assisting a licensee pursuant to rules adopted by the board. Have those two, is that? The manner to.
I think that motion.
Okay. That would be my motion. I was just kind of going back through it. So, do you want me to redo, say a different, is that acceptable?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Dr. Foreman just seconded.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Foreman. I didn't hear you. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, well, any other discussion or comments before we vote?
Mr. Abadi, does that sound good to you?
Yeah, I think
so.
Can
you restate that for me just so I can write it down?
Oh, you want the whole?
Yeah. Just state your motion.
Okay, so I will make a motion to add to our, or to, how would I say, to accept the following definition for a podiatric medical assistant. You want me to read that whole thing out?
No.
Okay, and then to and in addition to that, follow with the statement that the chapter does not prevent a podiatric medical assistant from assisting a licensee pursuant to rules adopted by the board.
Thank you.
Okay. So, and Dr. Foreman, would you second that again, please? Or Dr. Ilano? Thank you. And is, thank you, Dr. Ilano. Is there any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. So now, do we have to make a motion to put that into our, as an addendum to the
bill,
the draft?
You can make a motion to direct Heather to do that, yes.
Okay. So then I will make a motion to direct our executive director, Ms. Heather Broaddus, to contact or to add that definition and statement to our current legislative draft. I can't think of the number right now, Heather.
Well, there's no number.
There's a bill number.
The bill number, yeah. Okay.
But there's no bill numbers until it's introduced.
I'm sorry. I misspoke again. It's a bill folder number.
Bill folder number. Okay.
Yeah,
so we'll add
we
that
not
to
have
the
a bill
folder.
Number yet.
Okay.
Yeah. It's folder 133.
Okay. All right. So do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much.
Email me a copy
of
what you
have. I will. Yeah, of course.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Abadi.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Okay, next is our executive director's report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Just a few updates. The retention schedule that the board approved in October will be reviewed by Library and Archives at the end of December. So I'm hoping that will be approved sometime beginning of January, and I'll let the board know what action is taken on that. As I stated just previously, the current legislation that the board is trying to run, we do have a bill folder, and I was told by Senate staff that more than likely the sponsor will be Senator Pace. And I did get a draft copy of the legislation, and it is included. It's almost identical to what where we left off last session, except for the fingerprinting language has been updated. Is there any questions on that? I have an update on the sunset audit. The report was submitted by the deadline, and I was contacted by Senate staff to schedule a meeting, and that meeting will be on December 17th, and it's to review the sunset audit report, and Dr. Campbell and I will both be attending. Dr. Campbell was reappointed to the board, so congratulations. And Dr. Mark Rosales was on a non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education, and he completed those terms, so he was released from that order. The complaint log has had one additional complaint added to it since I sent board materials out. Is there any questions on any of those items? And then I just have a quick update about payroll. Payroll is one period behind, so for any board members that may have saw that it should have been deposited on December 3rd for the November meeting, it will not be in your bank account until December 17th. So on December 17th, you should see November and December's payroll in your account. And if you have any problems, because as I've indicated before in previous meetings, there's been some turnover at CSB. So if you ever have an issue, please let me know so I can get it taken care of. And that's my summary. I can answer any questions.
Okay, so we're and budget, did we have
a... I haven't gotten an updated budget yet.
Yeah, okay.
And again, I've been asking to start getting monthly updates again.
Okay, so next is our summary of current events. And a happy belated birthday to Mr. Rhodes.
And
yes, yay. And then, well.
Happy birthday, congratulations.
And then we have for Heather. Thank you, Heather, for all your hard work.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas from everyone.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Anyway, so. Do we, and the next item is our call to the public, and we have no public here to call. And does anyone have nine anything that they'd like to see on a future meeting agenda? Any items? Alrighty. So our next meeting will be January 13, 2021 in Boardroom C. And it is now 9 minutes of 10. Does anyone have anything else that they'd like to say or discuss? All right, seeing that all agenda items have been completed and nobody else has any other comments or remarks, I will move at 9 minutes of 10 to adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. We're starting tomorrow.
Yeah.